Hi everyone, it's Lunchy here. Welcome to my first ever set of, first and possibly only set of verbal recommendations. If you've never listened to any of my free talks before, it's going to kind of be like that. It's going to be pretty much largely unedited, and I'm not a very concise person, so it's going to be inundated with lots of giggling and umming and ahhing and possibly a lot of big pauses and stuff that if I get too lazy I won't edit out. Anyway, today I wanted to share with you, first of all, I guess, don't take these recommendations, because they're recommendations, they are, you know, your mileage may vary, and for me, I have a very large pool of things that I like, and in particular, I have some very specific subsets of things that are kind of like, maybe they're weird to some people, but I like them anyway. And I just wanted to introduce you to a few of those today. This is going to be really terrible, I can already tell. But, okay, so my first set of recommendations are going to revolve around this theme of kind of characters who are were-creatures. And I don't actually like this terminology of were-creatures, but that's like boiling it down to, I actually more like humans who have a duality in their lives of also being animals, or just animals themselves, and then coming from, because I really like the simplicity that animals have. Because, you know, in the, like, the only thing that separates us from, like, from animals is that we have higher thinking and we have and we're able to possibly lie to each other, but also verbally. Yeah, we have a lot of verbal communication and a lot of, like, motives that animals just don't have, because we've created a lot of things to have motives for. It's like, but animals don't have that. They have very simplistic basic needs. And I really like, you know, when you want a simplification of, like, when life is just like, why the fuck do people do those things? It's really nice to come into stories where you can just be like, the animal nature causes them to have such and such motives, and I can really tell. It's very easy to tell that these things. And also, it's just really funny funny and interesting to read about, and experience, like, what life would be like if you were part animal as well. I mean, we're, you know, descended from monkeys, but you know what I mean. Like, anyway, that's getting off track. But, yeah, so my set of recommendations today is about, animals. And very specifically, like, they need to, like, this is a huge kink of mine. Like, you can write about animals, and you can write about, like, werewolves and stuff like that, and I probably will read it, but what really clinches things for me, like, I'm so going to be into this, is if there's a wide array, like, a wide array of animals, and if you don't just turn into, like, a wolf or something, like, you turn into many different animals, like elephants, or if you turn into a giraffe, or things like that, and I just think they're just amazing. I just love it. And I think this is definitely having to stem from, absolutely, 100% stems from my love of Animorphs when I was a child. And Animorphs, if you lacked this in your childhood, or if this is really dating my age, is a series of books by K.A. Applegate about a group of five or six kids who find a spaceship at night with an alien coming out of it. He's the last of a dying race, and he gives them his power from that everybody on his home planet shares, which is the ability to morph into any biomolecular structure that they have touched before. And so that species is called Andalites, and they get an Andalite ally. And anyway, I have so many feelings, like, associated to that. That series of books for children just taught me so many morals and stuff, and amazing things that, you know, you don't really see a lot in other children's books, I don't think. So good. K. Applegate, I love you. But yeah, like, so in that series of books, the kids obviously, like, they go to a zoo or something, and they start touching all the animals that they can touch and turn into things. And the limitation that they have on this is that they can only their body can only handle this shape shifting for a 1 hour or some sort of time limitation, and if they don't shift back to their human form and then shift again back to the animal form, then they will get stuck as that animal form forever. So one of the characters goes through this very early on, like their first book. The reason that they encounter this phenomenon is because then they find out that there's an alien race called Yerks, which are a little bit like Daleks. They're little kind of worm sort of creatures that slither into the brains of other animals, other life forms, and take over their bodies. So, and this is a horrible, terrible thing because, you know, the person isn't dead. They're just held back. They can't move or structure their body. And I just can't imagine what kind of hell that is. As a child, I don't think I actually thought about this, but then Kay Applegate brought out I think she must have written a book about from this, the perspective of one of the people who had been taken over by a Yerk. And it's just like, it's just disturbing as shit. So that's one. That's the thing that I love about this, and also it comes with this kind of story. It brings out a lot of us versus them mentality that forces you to have to consider other people's motivations and second guess your own perceptions of who people are. Because in Animorphs, this is illustrated by Hawkbajirs. And Hawkbajirs are huge, like, bear-like creatures who are the Yerk fighting army, basically, because they have, blades on their arms, which are dead, like, perfect weapons. But in actuality, before they had been taken over by Yerks, their home planet was basically them and a bunch of bamboo plants. So they needed... They evolved to have these blades so that they could cut down food. And it was just like, this is terrible because the Yerks appropriated their bodies, which they only needed to cut down food, and they made them kill people because they're like the gentlest creatures that ever were. And it was just horrible. It was so horrible so terrible. Really, really. I get so sad thinking about that. And anyway, that kind of taught me there are reasons for why, you know, like in the beginning, when the kids encounter the Hawkbajirs, they're like, this is a terrifying army of terrifying fighting force. And, you know, the reality of the situation is that they got, you know, they were forced to be doing these things. And it was just like, it was horrible. Like a lot of stories will come out and say, you know, like the Romans, they're all tough. And like, what's that movie? 300. They're all beefed and bulked up, and they're warlike and ready for war and aggressive, and that's how they are. But, you know, there's actually other reasons for, other evolutionary reasons for why these things might happen. Like pandas. Pandas are an evolutionary what the fuck, because they're like, they evolved incorrectly. This is not, like, you can feel free to correct me on this, but, like, from what I remember reading, like, they shouldn't be eating bamboo. I think they're killing off some sort of, like, other species because of the fact that they eat bamboo, and they're really not supposed to because they're, like, they're not meant to be vegetarian. They have to eat so much more bamboo to compensate for the fact that they should be eating meat instead. But we're, like, they're cuddly and cute and they eat bamboo, which they are, but, you know. Okay. Sorry, I've babbled on enough. But suffice to say, I'm a person who really loves animals and things from an animal's perspective. And this is just doubly enhanced if you give me a story that these animals not only can talk, but they have to interact with other humans, and it has to be, like, all okay and good, and the universe has to make sense. And this, I just love it. I love it a lot. Yeah, it stemmed from Animorphs, but clearly it kind of grew to its own sort of state. So I guess maybe start off, my first recommendation is going to be a Sherlock fan fiction called An Act Too Often Neglected by Ava. It's close to 20,000 words, but it is completed. And the summary goes like this. D.I. Gregory Lestrade is actually a silver fox, and it's not an easy life by any stretch of the imagination. So, when I first clicked into this, I thought it was going to be a lovable story about how Lestrade cannot deal with the fact that he's still getting sexually harassed over the fact that he is so bloody handsome. I thought this was going to be a story about that kind of silver fox, but it's not. It's about were creatures, and it's so good. Okay, and okay, so why I think you should read this. It starts off with Lestrade getting driven to meet Mycroft because Mycroft sucks and he, you know, he likes being tall, dark and mysterious in warehouse buildings because he's an asshole like that. And Lestrade is just like, why isn't it enough that I am a werefox? Why? This sucks. So the reason that Mycroft, you know, wants to talk to Lestrade is, of course, because Sherlock. And that is also another thing that Lestrade is like, why my life? So it's a delightful story, and I'm going to give you a 3-second pause for you to go off, click it and read it, and then maybe come back and unclick this and listen to me squee about it, okay? 1, 2, 3. There's a lot of things that I really love about this story. So many things. Okay, first of all, I really, the world building that Ava has created, I think she's a very talented writer because I never felt as though any of the, I was being expositioned at. Like, everything came very naturally. There was no information that was given to me before it was necessary to be given. And there was also a lot of throwaway comments that were amazing, that just really deepened the universe in my mind. And I just thought, like, it just, oh, so good. The way that, like, those are the very best kinds of fantasy worlds and alternate universes, where nothing needs to be explained for you because the character doesn't need to explain. Like, the character takes it as a given that you know everything because you had grown up socialized the same way that everybody else was. These things should be not, like, known to you. And they're kind of the best kind of stories, I think. There's the writers that can give you this. They're the best. Okay. So one of the references that is made to this that expand the world a lot is the fact that there are poachers who try to get Lestrade by, you know, putting foreign objects. I think it was like ball bearings or something. They shot ball bearings at him so that the ball bearings got stuck into him and he couldn't change back. And therefore, by doing that, they could collar him, pierce him, and then sell him off to the highest bidder. And because were animals are very rare things that black market collectors like to collect, which fucking sucks. What the fuck is wrong with people? Why the fuck would you do that? Can't you just get an actual fox? Why the fuck do you... Terrible. Okay, but that's... that was one part of the world that I'm like, I can totally see this happening. Yes, this would happen. And it's awful, but it made the world feel very real. One of the aspects of it. The second aspect of the story was Lestrade having to deal with the fact that his wife was going to leave him for another man who wasn't a werecreature, and how utterly distraught he was over this because Sherlock rants at him. In chapter two, Lestrade goes up at him because Sherlock is disrupting the chain of evidence. You don't know how to maintain a chain of evidence. You don't know how to observe the rules of a crime scene. Fuck, letting you in here is bending them already. The bare minimum of politeness, Sherlock. Don't call him names. Don't treat him like he's an imbecile. If you can't manage that, get out. Save your appearance for my cases. Understood. And Sherlock is like, you know what? Fuck you. Okay, I'm just going to accept this for now, but I'm going to dig where it hurts. Hey, Lestrade, they're supposed to take care of you, you know? Spouses, wives, they're supposed to look after you. It's like, oh, right in the... That is too far, Sherlock, that is too far. Right? Like, you're an asshole. So, it's beautifully done. This, like, you know, how Ava gets you to understand the fact that Lestrade is going through a very tough time with his wife. And so, you know, there are needs that Wes have that he can't communicate properly with his wife because he feels lucky to me, I think, is that he feels like he shouldn't be burdening her with these other, like, with these things about his wear self. And therefore, their partnership is pretty incomplete in that sense. She's looking for a way out. Like, she doesn't want this anymore. And I'm like, man, I mean, yeah, like, but, you know, relationships are tough. You should have toughed it. You should have done anyway. But this is how we get Maestrad. So, like, the way that that Ava built that was really great. And then when to the other bit of werepack mentality that we get to see is the fact that all werepack, they're very tactile. And John, having, you know, unlike Lestrade, who got saved by Mycroft, no one was there to save John, getting shot in Afghanistan with a real bullet, couldn't get all the stuff dug out of his shoulder, therefore cannot change at all, ever, and all the were animals sensing, like, all the wares sensing this and being like, we don't want to hang out with you, please don't look at us, please go away, you're making us so uncomfortable, because their very sense of self stems from the fact that they need to change. And being surrounded, like, being in John's very presence and being like, you can't change, you're so abnormal, is, like, a very telling part of this universe. And it was built so beautifully by Ava. It was just, like, amazing. I loved it so much. But Lestrade, he kind of, like, you know, he gets to know John as a person, and he knows that. And he's lonely because fucking his wife doesn't understand anything about wares. And other wares, maybe, I don't know, he doesn't seem to have a lot of other ware friends in this story for some reason that I can't remember. And John, because John doesn't, you know, can't get this tactile behavior from anybody else because everybody's like, ew, no, exhibits this only basically with Lestrade. And, like, when Lestrade's wife, like, you know, walks in on Lestrade and John having bro-ware behavior, like, you know, cuddling with each other on the couch because this is how ware animals behave. They're touching each other for comfort and protection and a sense of family. And she walks into them and she's like, oh, no wonder, like, totally you're gay and you're cheating on me. And Lestrade is, like, looking at us like, bitch, I can smell the fact that you've been with another man. You're just basically looking for a way out. But he gives it to her because what's the point in trying to hang on to something when the other person clearly wants to leave? So that's something that, you know, he kind of just resigns himself to. It's very sad. But as a were animal, Lestrade himself doesn't like, he understands, like, tactility, like, this needing, and this goes back to, like, you know, the perceptions of people. So while we're animals want to touch each other, Lestrade doesn't like being touched when he's in his were form as a silver fox. He can tolerate being petted, but he doesn't like being touched where he's vulnerable, so, you know, the belly and things like that. And John gets super aggressive. Oh, I should also say that I love the way that this mirrors the timeline of the second season, the first season and the second season, so it's beautiful. When John gets really angry at Lestrade, he's trying to get Lestrade to act out and tell people when he gets uncomfortable, because this is the reason that his marriage failed, because he couldn't communicate with his wife at all and couldn't communicate his needs to her. And John, like, totally pushes this. He's like, you know, you should fucking change fucking now, what's wrong, just change. And changing in front of people is a very personal thing that Lestrade is very uncomfortable about. But he does it anyway, because it's like, oh, okay. And he does it, and then immediately, like, John is, like, sitting him down and petting him, like, aggressively petting him and, like, petting, like, his soft underbelly, and he really hates this. And John knows that he really hates this, but he won't, like, go away from John or tell John, like, or indicate that he wants John to stop. And John gets really mad about this, and is just like, you suck. This is a sucky part of your personality. Like, usually you're awesome, but in this you suck. Which is something that I enjoyed a lot. And stemming from this behavior. So this is a really good example of a story that is driven, like, is character driven, where the plot comes from the character themselves, I think. Like, this is just my personal opinion, is that it flows so naturally because of the way that this character acts, therefore the story unfolds like it does. So the very reason that his wife leaves him is the very reason that Mycroft doesn't try to get with him anymore, because Lestrade, both him and Sherlock, are under the assumption that Lestrade and John are together, and Lestrade doesn't bother to correct them of their erroneous assumption. It's just a pack animal thing, and like, you know what guys, you don't understand it, I don't give a shit. But that's the reason. So kind of they were like flirty together, and Lestrade's all of a sudden like, Mycroft is backs the fuck off, and Lestrade is like, fine bitch, fine. Even though he's like pretty hurt by this, and you're just like, you know, why wouldn't you be? Because like, you really like someone, and all of a sudden they just got cold on you. Terrible. So I really enjoy the fact that Mycroft, like, this is an intrinsic part of the room, like, of their getting together story, is that Mycroft got the wrong idea about where relations. And that's all I think that's pretty much all the feels that I should say about this before it gets any longer. Suffice to say, I enjoyed the crap out of this story, and I really think that you should give it a shot. Especially if you listened to this and you didn't read the story. Naughty, naughty. That's what the 3 seconds were for. Okay. My second rec to go on from this is, I guess it can't really be a recommendation yet, because it's only, it's a work in progress, and I'm actually only 7 chapters in. So far it's 90,000 words. Is it 90,000? It's 86,000 words. I'm sorry. It's 86,000 words. It's called How to Build a Heart Out of Ashes by Tumessian. And its summary goes like this. In an alternate universe where there is a small number of the population who become changelings at a young age, at 17, John Watson believes he's destined for a normal life, but the change takes him and he is sent to the Baker Institute, where he meets Sherlock Holmes. And it's a Sherlock and John story. And so the universe that gets created out of this story is pretty, it's very high school. Obvious. Like, John gets sent to a different institution where they combine primary school, high school, and university together. And in that sense, it, like, the story kind of reminds me of a manga, like a high school manga. So if you're into it, and I am, like, if you're into those things, then you will probably enjoy this story. And if you're not into these things, you may not enjoy this story. But, you know, come with me. Let me tell you why it is that I enjoy this. So the thing that is dealt with in this story is the same us versus them mentality. So only a very small population actually are wares. But it is institutionalized that they get sent to other places where they learn to control themselves and learn to control their changing. Usually this gets, they get found out at a very early age, say like 12 or 13. So the fact that John changes at 17 is hugely disconcerting and not normal. So when he gets sent to the Institute, it's not a Harry Potter thing, you know, where it's one, like he's a special circumstance. Whereas in Harry Potter, it's not a special circumstance. You know, Harry comes in first year and he goes up all the way to seventh year. So John comes in during a time where he should already know everything, but he doesn't because it just happened to him. So we get a kind of more unique perspective, but it's an outsider coming in story. So it's very easy to follow, because things get explained to you in a very exposition heavy way. Very different from Ava's An Act Too Often Neglected. The thing that I really enjoy about this is the fact that in their universe, it's a big thing because they're in a school, so many people go out and change into their changeling selves at the same time. So they develop a way to speak to each other. Well, they have a way to speak to each other. It's a bit of a psychic connection, a bit of not telekinesis, what is it? like they have telepathy, a very rudimentary form of telepathy with each other, where they broadcast feelings and concepts to each other's in each other's into each other's minds to try to, like, meet me at the lake. So that's like, the image of a lake, let's meet there kind of feeling. And the first time that John changes, he changes into a wolf. This is his first form. I'm only 7 chapters in out of a possible 28, where only 18 have been written so far. So I'm coming into this, and I think what might happen, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think what happens is that once you change, you have a base form, but you can change into other animals once you learn how. This is what I think. And he meets Greg first. Greg takes him around and shows him the different parts of the campus, becomes his friend. He also makes friends with Molly, who is totally in love with this guy called Sherlock Holmes. And John is like, "What? Okay, whatever, Molly, you're a bit weird, but you're pretty cool. I'm sorry that you have to be a girl and have this crush on this guy who's a bit aloof, but you'll get over it. It'll be fine." Then they hang out and have lunch together. Him, John, Mike, Stanford, Donovan, and Addison are in there too, and also Molly. But all the students need to change every 3 days or so, or else their were selves get too antsy, and then they could spontaneously change exactly the way that John did when he first changed. So it's a way to keep their were selves controlled. Their changeling selves controlled is they need to go out and be animals for a while, and then come back in and then resume normal life. The first few chapters deal with how John and Sherlock interact with each other, and it's done in a pretty cool way. Sherlock is a like is his 17-year-old self is like, "I hate people," and John gets told, like, there's a very special antisocial student here, and his name is Sherlock Holmes. No one's seen his changeling form, but we know that he's been here since he was 5 years old. And it's like, whoa, you're all, and it's like, this is a huge deal, because, like, the same way that John is a huge, like, is John is an anomaly coming into the school at 17, Sherlock is an anomaly because he changed when he was 5. It's a very interesting take on Sherlock's personality and how he and John interact, and I think it's done really well, because John first meets Sherlock in their changeling forms, and he meets them because the telepathy, which is very basic with everybody else, is crystal clear with Sherlock. They can interact pretty much as they would in human form. It's a crystal clear talking to each other, chatting, everything. Whereas with everybody else, he can kind of send like one or two words and emotions and feelings. With Sherlock, he has whole conversations, while in his changeling animal form. And Sherlock is fascinated by this. He's never been able to do this with anybody else. Like, he doesn't really like talking to people, but he's fascinated with how John is so easily able to communicate with him during his changeling form. So in the beginning, when they first meet each other, Sherlock goes after him and is like, "You're very, I'm fascinated by you because we can talk to each other like this." And John is like, "Oh, so that's an anomaly. So that's cool. Thanks for that." And Sherlock becomes a bit more like, "Ah, I know who you are. You're John Watson." And there goes into his deductions about things, and it's just pretty. And John is like, "Oh my God, how did you know that about me?" He's like, "Because I saw and I deduced, duh." And because of his sense of fair play, John doesn't ask Sherlock who he is. So the first part of the story is all about trying, like, will they, will he, won't he, when will he figure out who this panther is? When will he figure out it is Sherlock? So go check out that story if you haven't, and I'll tell you a few spoilery things when you come back, okay? One, two, three. A few spoilery things about this. I kind of can't spoil you too much because I've only read up to seven chapters. But I thought I would tell you anyway. Is I'm really looking forward to seeing where the mystery leads. Like, yeah, and of course you know there's going to be a mystery of Sherlock being born. That how cute was that outing when he and John went to London? That was so super cute. But then they got attacked in the alleyway by people who were like, "Ooh, bitches." And they're like, oh, highest form of insult right there. And you get to see the preening side of Sherlock always trying to show off for John, which I also appreciate so much. And you get to see, but yeah, I'm really excited to see where this mystery is going to go. I really like this concept of the Wanderers that that is introduced in this story, about how you people who have embraced their animal side wholeheartedly stay animals, just decide to stay animals forever and never change back into humans. And just appreciating how much Sherlock thinks this is such a dumb thing to do. Like, he doesn't like this at all. And I'm more inclined to be like Sherlock. I'm like, why would you give up being a human and being an animal when you want? Like, that's kind of limiting. But then because I'm like, if you want your life to be super simplistic, why not be an animal forever? Because sometimes I look at my dog and I'm like, I would like to be you. Nothing, like, you know, you kind of chase things when you want to chase things and sleep when you want to sleep and eat when you want to eat. You're like, you have a great existence because you don't worry about things at all, and you're super excited for walks and people will pet you because you are a dog. Anyway. So, super simplistic lives. I guess, why wouldn't you? Like, this is possibly the mentality that the Wanderers get before they decide, yeah, I'm gonna do that, and then they do. So I'm really excited to see that plot point come up. And it was really kind of well done, although it did look like the start of a new arc. So the first arc being Sherlock and John get to know each other. In their animal form, John gets to know who Sherlock is, and then he understands that Sherlock is a super weird person, but super smart, super brainy, detective, deductive, and awesome. And then you get a mystery introduced. So, and probably like, you know, now that Sherlock and John, are friends with each other. The new question is going to be, while this mystery is raging on in the background, when the fuck are they going to get together? So I'm looking forward to see where that is going. And I'm looking forward to see how the author is going to deal with Donovan and Anderson, because so far they've, you know, been the, like, they're used as characters who are just like, John, shame on you. Don't hang out with Sherlock. He's weird. And I'd like to see if they kind of grow as characters. I'm looking for that in like every single fic. In every single fic, I'm always hoping that like Donovan and Anderson grow as characters, and they're just not simply the caricatures that we see from episode one, because I feel like in fan fiction, since we're kind of warping everything. All the other characters, when we're making them grow as people, could we not maybe do that as well? Although I do see the trend of all the fan fiction writers kind of going like, kind of banding together and saying like, yeah, Sally dumped Anderson because she is so much better than that. So I guess that says something as well. So that's my two fanfic recommendations. The next two recommendations I have one's a webcomic and one's a Japanese manga. So if you like, you know, if you're not into that, you know, you can click off now. But you'll be losing out because they're really good. And they also follow this theme of like werecreatures, except not kind of really. But I'll explain that. The first recommendation that I have for you is called Pandect. It's a webcomic and it is so fucking funny, guys. It is hilarious. But this is like of the multitude things that I could tell you about Pandect, I just want you to first and foremost know that it is the most fucking hilarious thing ever. This could be because I have a crude and juvenile sense of humor, but Still to this day, I still think it is one of the most funniest things that I've ever read. I just love how the artist makes jokes. The artist's name is Dina Situ. She's been drawing Pandect since 2004. She's got 17 chapters out, and it is very, the story is so, you know how sometimes when you read graphic novels, you're like, where is the story? There is no such thing happening in Pandect. The story is very coherent and surprisingly linear, I guess. Like sometimes you feel like graphic novels sometimes lose the plot, but it's not happened in the 17 chapters that she's written. Everything is quite plotted out, and it's hilarious. Okay, the main story follows a character called Fleance, who comes into a school called Poseidon Academy. Ostensibly, he's a 15-year-old boy and very normal, but he is so not. He's actually a panther, who has earned his right to have a human form, and he's coming into this school because he promised another animal turned human called Theo that he would look after his body. Why would you look after his body? It's because is not inhabited by Theo anymore. It is inhabited by Theo's sister Venus. Venus, who did something very, very bad, and they totally wanted to kill Venus, but Theo was begging and saying, like, please don't kill Venus. She can have my body. And just don't kill her. And they're like, well, Theo, this is going to be a problem because you're kind of like one of our warriors. So, you have to seal off your warrior powers so that your sister cannot access it. And he's like, yeah, okay. So there are a couple of like really cool concepts to this web comic. One is having to deal with like animals having animal characteristics, turning human, having to integrate into human society without being weird. And they never, like, this is never, they don't fully, they're not fully able to do this. Even the most, the most experienced out of all of them, who started off life being a dog, so he's a dog ace. So an ace is the term that they use for the animal that has been able to get a human form. So one such character is a dog ace called Ice, and he's been integrated the most in human society because he started off life having a human owner who loved him so much because he was such a cute dog. And then, like, so he knows a lot about this. But even so, he still calls women bitches. So he goes they ha when he's interacting with a non-ace student, he says, "Hey man, let's go down to the pub and meet some bitches." And the guy goes, "That's a little bit offensive." And the guy's like, and but Ace is like, Ice is like, "Yeah, let's go." There's still some very telling things, even if they're very experienced and integrated into human culture. Other things that Fleance does. Fleance, because the main character of the story is Fleance, but as all web comics and graphic novels start to be, like, sometimes the main character isn't the best loved character out of the story, and this is quite apparent in Pandect as well. I don't know if Dina Situ planned for that to happen, but it totally did. But it's still fucking funny. Okay. I'm highlighting how amazingly hilarious it is because I'm sorry, it just really appeals to my sense of humor. And there's just so many gags because of the fact that as a web comic, it updated like one page at a time. And so, like, I guess like it was she's so good at setting up one page gags. Otherwise it's as a as someone who's trying to come in and be into things like every week, you sort of need a conclusion, but you as much as you want the story to keep going. So Dina Sudo is really like she's really talented at making like short one page gags that still somehow further the story, and I'm intensely like impressed by that because it's been a very long time that this has been going, like, that this has been drawn, so the continuity of this is astounding. Okay, so the story follows that Fleance is there just to look over Theo's body. But what's actually happened is that Venus, who was an ace herself and had gotten a human body, then went on and had relations with another human, with a human, so ace and a human, and got pregnant. And this is the reason that they were like, no, this cannot happen, because unions between ace and human result in a vampire, something that just that is like unholy and demonish, and they have to kill it. It's a thing that just destroys everything it touches and eats everything. So they wanted to kill it, and be and but somehow, and this is the mystery of Pandect, is that the baby somehow survived, even though they killed the mother's body. And that's the this is like kind of like the whole like this is kind of what it revolves around. It also revolves around a class tension between serpent aces and serpent aces versus the world, basically, because they kind of blame snakes for bringing down the whole of civilization, thanks to the story about Adam and Eve. And because a snake fucked things up for everybody, now we're all like, ugh, snake aces, don't trust them, they're terrible. So there's that kind of thing going on it as well. It's so highly enjoyable. There are so many fun characters in Pandect. There is one character who had contracted a virus when he was in Africa. He is the human in he's pretty much the one of two humans in Pandect. And he contracted a virus that makes him become a pervert who comes on to people, and he gets such a bad rep around the academy because of this. And his name is Caesar. So there's a girl who gets knocked into Caesar in the hallway, and she looks up at him. He's quite a good looking man, but she looks up and he's like, oh my god, I touched Caesar the pervert, I am no longer a virgin, and runs off. And it's just, oh my god, that's how hilarious it is. But when he gets the virus going on, he starts coming on to people like no one's business and making incredible euphemisms, and it has incredible pickup lines that are just like, I cannot believe you. He tries to he's hitting on the dog ace Ice. Like he says things like, do you like it soft or hard, hey? And Ice looks at him and is like, soft? Hard? Is he talking about tacos? So funny. So funny. I think I've just ruined one of the best jokes of Pandect, and I apologize for that, but it happens really early on, so I'm sorry about that. So the story of Pandect is incredibly fun, has a lot to do with animals, and is one of the most creative things and the most pretty things that I've ever had the pleasure to read. So I urge you to go and read it and experience it for yourself, and then we can come back after I say 1, 2, 3, and we can talk about Edgar and Noah, okay? So 1, 2, 3. Thanks for going and reading Pandect, because it is brilliant and amazing and makes your life so much better. Now we're going to talk about Noah and Edgar and just how ruinous their love is for me. Okay, like my as soon as Noah got introduced, I think I just fell for him so fast. It was like unbelievable. I liked like I, and I just fell for him because Dina drew such a cool snake. Like the first page that that Nora appears, she's like, I'm sorry, like I was so much more interested in drawing the snake. And I'm like, I don't really like the concept of snakes in real life, but like she just made the snake so awesome on the page and so lifelike. I just looked at it and got and just went like, that is the most amazing thing that I have ever friggin' seen. Oh, so amazing. And you know, just the interaction between him and Edgar is so hilarious and lovely, and really actually terrible and sad. Like I kind of get a little bit like I get a little bit annoyed at how Edgar keeps speaking in a third person. But this is mocked by other characters in the comics, so I think it's okay. I think Dina is also aware that it's a bit crap. And you know, very early on, it gets established that he's on the lookout for his like one true love soulmate, that he has to give up something like the most precious thing to him is. And like finally, 17 chapters later, we get to find out what that very special thing like is, and it's heartbreaking. I feel so bad for Noah. I think he's like pretty much the most he's like the most fascinating character in the entirety of Pandect. I think his character has been fleshed out the most because we get to see, you know, him in the flashback. Oh my god, that flashback is so, oh my god. I felt so bad for him. But then, like, Delia is so awesome. His daughter is so awesome. I also enjoy the fact that because they were all animals and they were like, yeah, I've already been pregnant like twice. I've already got like 10 babies. And just, you know, and Caesar looking at them, other humans is looking at them going like, aren't you 15? How the hell have you already had kids? That is so enjoyable. But the way that they have, like, the way that they think about have like sex and babies and families, I really enjoy that. It's really indicative of how much Dina has, I guess, thought about animals and what their culture would be like if they were thinking human feeling, human beings. So, it's incredibly interesting. I really enjoyed Pandact. It taught me a lot about animals. Whether or not any of these facts are true or not, who cares? Because like it's still fascinating and like a brilliant comic. But anyway, back to Noah. Back to Noah. Not only did he have one of the most badass costumes that, and really complex. I'm just so impressed by Dina's ability to like draw out his huge black metal fuck off jacket like for so long until he changed into like a black t-shirt and pants. But very simplistically, how she represents him, like how she's able to individualize his character. So, you know, just simply by giving him those under eye markings, the same as his snake form, and also having those little plaits in his hair. I just really love him. He's such a great fleshed out character. Everybody else sometimes comes off a little bit, you know, they have their own motivations, but as always in a comic, they're sometimes used for gags, which is full fine and dandy. It's just like amazing that Noah is as fleshed out as he is. Like, I enjoy Noah so much. I enjoy Noah so much. I'm so sorry. I'm just fangirling him at the moment. But I am. I just love him so much. I kind of love the tragedy that is his life. That he just so in love with Edgar, or what we perceive to be as love, but he's just like so wrong for him, the lowest servant ace, not particularly bright, has to give up all his powers if he wants to be with him. And the kicker is that Edgar doesn't even friggin' love him. Like Edgar is all about, he's all about Fleance. But, you know, we know it's like he's not all about Fleance because he totally kept Noah's secret about being a serpent supremacist. But also that Noah is a sexual object who people just write about him like he's a sexual fantasy and not a real person, which is uncomfortably close to like celebrity culture of, you know, fantasizing about such and such just because you don't see them as a real person with feelings. So, I think Noah is like an incredibly cool character, and I'm really impressed by all the things that Dina has done to flesh him out. He's just so great. He's so great. I just want all the good things to happen to Noah, but he's even knowing that he's killed like 20,000 people, which is like an astoundingly big number. Noah, okay, how did you do that? Oh, he's amazing. He's amazing. So, that is my squee for Pandect. I hope to squee a lot about it. perhaps hoping, fingers crossed, that it comes back and resumes sometime in the future, because it's just left off at a great part. Like I'm very satisfied with the 17 chapters that I've read, but I would like more, because I would like more Noah and more Fleance, and perhaps more of the cubs, Koros and. Was it? No, I can't remember his other name. Also, I really like Teddy. I like Teddy. I love the little panel that when he's like coming out of the tent and he's like, "Oh, they left these toys for me and they left all this food for me." But really, like, they just left that. Like, humans were like, "Oh my God, fuck, a bear." And they just ran off. But he's like, "You left me a teddy bear and you left me a caterpillar. We have to be friends." And that's how he goes to earn his ace. I'm like, "Oh, Teddy, you're so misguided, but you're so great." So, end of story. Pandect, brilliant, awesome, best thing that you've probably potentially ever read, and so much better. Like, her art is like so much better than like many professionals, professional manga that I just can't even handle it. Like, she's just so great. One of the draw just one just the one thing that really bugs me about Pandect is the fact that her handwriting is fine, it's and her but sometimes her grammar is not great, and another failing is that she misspells words. But I can totally forgive that because her dialogue is awesome and her drawings are awesome, and also I understood it and I still laughed. So on the whole, doesn't really detract it that much. So you can get over it, 'cause I did. Very last rec, on the theme of were-creatures is a manga called Sex Pistols, or that if you it's been localized, translated, localized, in America as Love Pistols, possibly because it's Sex Pistols the band. I'm not sure. Okay, now, so many warnings about love or about Sex Pistols. It is not for somebody. You should not read this if it will be your first experience reading boys love manga. Boys love manga is a manga that's been written by women for women in featuring gay relationships. And this and Sex Pistols should not be your gateway into into boys love manga because it is bizarre. So bizarre. It's written by Tarako Kotobuki. It has, I think, 8 volumes so far, and it's pretty much also a work in progress, but that's not the most important thing about this. The most important thing about this is how ridiculous it is. It's ridiculous and astronomically funny. I think she's one of the most outrageous. Her imagination, I can't fathom how her imagination works. I just can't. She's so unexpectedly hilarious about so many things, and then the tone can just change so dramatically from hilarious to downright tragedy. It's just amazing. The story of Love Pistols goes something like this. A typical high school boy named Nori gets hit by a car and almost dies. And while he's in a coma, he sees somebody waving to him across the river of death. And that someone is like, "Hey, isn't that my grandfather? Hey, why is my grandfather holding a cat? That cat. It's really hypnotic." And when he wakes up from his coma, shit gets real. Suddenly, everybody looks like monkeys. Everybody. People start talking to him, and he is like, "Why the fuck are you all monkeys? His mum looks like a monkey, his dad looks like a monkey, like everybody looks like monkeys. Why is this so insane?" So and he just like he can't deal with this. He goes to school and it's like, "Why is everybody a monkey?" And then, like, to make matters worse, like, when people aren't monkeys, they look like dogs or bears and or like huge, like, he just can't deal with this. It is like, why? Why? The why, we find out, is because there are two types of people in the world. One type of people are called humanity, which are all the humans who have been descended from apes. And the other type of humanity is all of the other people who descended from other animals, such as dragons, dogs, birds, bears, so on. And unfortunately for Norio, he wakes up and with the ability to see both worlds. The reason that he can do this is because his grandfather happened to be descended from a cat. And he mated with a human, and all their children turned out to be just normal, ordinary ape-descended humans. But Norio is very special because once, like when he was born and had a near-death experience, the animal in him that was descended upon his grandfather came out, and suddenly he finds out that he's actually a missing link, which is very, very special to the Zumanity of the world. Why is it so special? Well, it's because humanity are incredibly fertile creatures, and Zumanity are not. In fact, they have a really horribly hard time procreating. Like, they have such a hard time, in fact, that they... they've developed a way for everyone to give birth. So, okay guys, this is why this is not a good gateway into boys' love. But if you are in fandom, perhaps you have already encountered the phenomenon of male pregnancy and preg, which Love Pistols or Sex Pistols has created lots of science for. And it's so good. It's you just when you get to the parts where they describe how it is that Zumanity can impregnate each other, you will die. You will die a thousand happy deaths because it is so hilarious. Okay, I'm sorry. It is joyful. Okay, Sex Pistols is joyful. Okay, so why is a missing link such a big deal in Zumanity? Why is Norio such a huge commodity to Zumanity? Well, because he is descended from both ape and Zumanity, this means that he is prime breeding material. The strongest of the strongest of Zumanity want to impregnate the fuck out of him. They are insanely obsessed with creating very strong offspring. There's like a pyramid of dominance and strength within Zumanity. And if you can create, you know, if your offspring are going to be very strong and dominant, then they'll have, you know, an easier time with life because then they can have better marriage prospects and business connections and so on and so forth. So, of course, the biggest and strongest out there are just looking for ways to be able to procreate, because the stronger that you are, the less able you are to procreate, or have your procreation result in strong babies, which is why the missing link are a huge draw for Zumanity, because they're incredibly fertile, and if you're a returner to ancestry or a missing link, you have a much higher percentage of not only breeding, but breeding very strong children. So poor Norio, as soon as he wakes up, surrounded by monkeys. And not only is he surrounded by monkeys, but his body is broadcasting to the entirety of Zumanity, telling them all, hey, look at me, I am super attractive, please come and get me. So he's just constantly being accosted by people everywhere, just trying to get a piece of him. People are hitting on him left and right, and he's just like, I really wish that you didn't look like a monkey to me right now, because I would totally date you, but you look like a monkey. So, the story then, like, okay, so, you know, the story about this is boys love. So yeah, he ends up with a dude, but, this is essentially the crux Not the Crocs, this is the setup of the story, and it is amazingly brilliant, hilarious, creative, oh my god, amazing. And it's also, for all that it is cracktastic, it's also incredibly emotional, and gets so weirdly depressing sometimes, which by its premise you would think, how the fuck does it do that? But I guess it's because, you know, Kotobukiya Tarako is just incredibly talented that way. So a very strong warning for if you also if you are thinking of like this is the thing for you, is please don't click into it if you're squeamish about seeing explicitly drawn sex scenes. In the first volume, I don't think this is such a big problem, but as the series progresses, they do get pretty graphic. So if you're a bit like, ugh, I don't want to see that, then, you know, don't. But just know, in passing that up, you are missing out on some hilarious gags, and they're hilarious everything. They're hilarious everything. So I strongly urge you. If you can, please check it out. But maybe after a few other, you've read a few other boys' love manga. It really isn't a great gateway manga. But it is really one of my favorites. And it's not because not only because it is super hilarious, but also because there are two characters in particular that you just love the shit out of. And I've never talk to anybody who didn't love these two characters after they have read Pe Sex Pistols. There are many, many stories about many, many characters, but they always return to like the main storyline of Norio and his missing linkness and the family that he gets involved with. And one of the people in his prospective husband's family is the older brother called Yonokuni, and his boyfriend, who's called Shiro. And when you get to their story, and theirs is the their story is maybe I think chapter it starts in the first volume and it ends in the second volume. And once you read that, you just kind of fall in love with them. You just want good things to happen to them. Because they're just ridiculous, but they're so cute. You just want good things to happen just all the time to Shiro especially. I'm gonna give you a little bit of a pause here so that you can go off and read it, okay? Oh, good, you've returned. Okay. So Shiro and Yonokuni, because like I think Yonokuni when he was younger is so cute. Like he's drawn in such a cute way. But their relationship is just so beautiful. It's just so cute. Like how Yonokuni has a thing for dogs is amazing. And they have like that brilliant line when he like not a brill like it's not a line, but that whole section where he thinks about sex and how sex is just something that helps him sleep because he can get it so easily. That's one of the things that I really enjoy about Sex Pistols is like because of the lifespan of animals, they don't think it's like they can be as promiscuous as they want because animals know that they have a very short life expectancy. This is something also covered in Pandect, but I don't think it's very explicit here. It also because it's boys love manga, everybody's just fucking everybody, which is also a reason. Like I didn't exactly like the resolution of sometimes like because the characters are drawn so I guess in such a manly way, sometimes it's very jarring to see Shiro acting so submissively. But at other times, it's just like it's very nice because the way that Kotobuki Tarako draws is a huge step away from like the normal characters in boys' love manga. So you know, Shiro doesn't look like Norio, who is your typical kind of uke type character. But there's just so much to love about this. There is so much to love. So yeah, everybody's favorite Shiro and Yonokuni. Would love to keep seeing them forever. I really hope. Like, she's gone on a bit of a hiatus, and like maybe she's just starting to like lose fuel on Sex Pistols. But once again, it's just you just love it so much. Like, you're glad it exists. I think this is the reason why I'm not upset about Works in Progress. A lot of boys' love is like, or a lot of manga in general, sometimes they get a really great setup, but they never reach a good conclusion, or because sometimes they just don't get to the conclusion because the author runs out of steam and stops. Which is very dangerous for their careers, I guess. But to me, it's like, well, you already provided me with quite a lot of nice things that I probably won't, like, that I've probably internalized and will take with me forever, and nothing will surprise me now that I have read these things. So I don't really mind Works in Progress that much because of this. Because of the experience that I've had with just manga in general and how, some people kind of lose steam, which is like, that's okay. You gave me good things. I enjoyed it. Thank you. So that's the end of my recs about werecreatures. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm sorry that it's went on for so long. I think next time I'm just going to try doing one at a time. But I had a theme going, and I just really wanted to complete it. So thanks for listening to an hour and some minutes of my babbling. I hope you liked it. Comment, I guess, if you comment or something, if you'd like me to do more of these, because I don't really know how well this went. But I will warn you that things that I rec are probably shameful to me. Like, you will be like, this is what Lunchie's tastes are. I don't really think I want to know her anymore. So that's all for me this time. Thank you so much for listening. Bye.